But the part which I want to focus on is the beginning of the portion, Pinchas. So what happens? So Pinchas is rewarded. He's rewarded to become a Kohen because of his zealotry in killing Zimri and Cosby. Again, Zimri from the tribe of Shimon, who at the end of last week's portion had committed this immorality of consorting with this Midianite princess. In the context of this whole massive seduction of so many Jewish men who are being drawn towards these Midianite and Moabite women, specifically, just to be clear, the Moabite women, there was a partnership between Moab and Midian. The Moabite women, they seduced the men at large. Midianite women were sent to seduce leaders. Right, so the Midianite women were sent to seduce the leaders. It says this over here that the women of Moab enticed only the general population, whereas the women of Midian tried to entice the Jewish leaders as well. And included in that as well was Zimri from the tribe of Shimon, and he was seduced. He was seduced into committing this atrocity, this immorality with a Midianite princess, right, Cosby. So Pinchas seeing this, when Pinchas sees this, he is just so moved in such a zealous fashion to try to stop this. And he does. He goes with a spear, and as they're committing the actual act itself, he spears them and kills the two of them, right? And he kills them. And this is described as a mitzvah. He performed a mitzvah. He stopped a terrible atrocity, a chil Hashem, a desecration of God's name, public desecration of God's name, because people knew about it. It was essentially in public. It was known about what was going on. And he is rewarded. And how is he rewarded? He becomes a Kohen. So just to clarify this, he becomes a Kohen, even though the Pasuk says about him, he is the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron a Kohen. So he already was a Kohen. Right, if Pinchas is the son of Elazar, son of Aaron, so he was already a Kohen. So why does he have to become a Kohen again? Why is he becoming a Kohen? He already is a Kohen. He's given this reward of Bris Shalom because he took up this zeal, the zealotry.
Well, sure.
Became a Kohen, so he Kohen already. So the answer is, a famous answer Rashi explains, is that when Kahuna, priesthood was established initially with Aaron, it was established specifically with Aaron and his four sons. And only those children born thereafter. But only the only Kohanim, when priesthood was initially initiated, it was only with Aaron and his four sons, Elazar, Isamar, Nadav, and Avihu. They were the only Kohanim, five Kohanim. Pinchas was already born, and other cousins were also born. But they were not Kohanim. They were not ordained, or they weren't installed as Kohanim initially. So it's really quite amazing. Mm-hmm. Of the tribe of Levi, only five Kohanim were installed in the very first place. But all the other grandchildren were not installed as Kohanim. So Pinchas was from the lineage of Kohanim, but he wasn't installed as an actual Kohen. He was a Levi. He was just a regular Levi. Because of this episode, he was now elevated. He was given the reward of becoming a Kohen. He was now elevated. I think it's the only time in history that anyone ever became a Kohen when they weren't a Kohen. I always say that I became a Levi when I was never a Levi. That's because I found out I was a Levi, but I didn't become a Levi, right? I found out I was really a Levi. Many people find out they're Levi, will find out the Kohanim, will find out they were Kohanim, they're not Kohanim. You know, it goes a lot of different ways. This is the only person, I think, that actually became elevated to become a Kohen. He wasn't a Kohen, he became a Kohen. Mm. And that's what happened. I saw an amazing commentary in one of the commentaries quotes the Chassam Sofer. Actually, it goes to the Zohar. The Zohar says that what is another reason why specifically now he became a Kohen. This goes into a bit of a mystical territory of Gilgulim, of reincarnation, right? Because so the Zohar says, amazingly, that Nadav and Avihu, they were the other two Kohanim. There was Aaron and his four sons, Elazar and his son, and Nadav and Avihu. So Nadav and Avihu had already passed away at this point. They died in that terrible, miraculous death when they brought the Esh Zara, when they brought the foreign fire, when they on the day of the Mishkan being inaugurated. So they, on their own, of their own volition, they decided to bring a sacrifice which they weren't commanded, an offering which they weren't commanded, in their inspiration and in the fervor, they ran into the Holy of Holies to bring a sacrifice, to bring an offering of incense. They weren't commanded, and a fire came down and killed them, and they died in that story. And that really, and it goes down in history as an example of many. The commentaries discuss exactly what their sin was, but one of the components of the sin was because they made that decision unilaterally without Moshe's consent. They had the fervor, they had the spiritual desire to bring this offering. They didn't consult with Moshe, and they went ahead and did it, right? And they died because of that, right? And that's what, so the Zohar says their souls now came down into Pinchas right before he committed the act of zealotry. The Zohar says that then the neshamas came down and now attached themselves to Pinchas right before he was about to do this act of zealotry. And it was because the Zohar explains, and it was because of this that he became a Kohen, because in a certain sense, he took over their kahuna. So while there were only five Kohanim, it went down to three. So two Kohanim are now missing. So that's a very small number of Kohanim. But their kahuna status then got transferred to Pinchas because their souls came down into Pinchas. And right before the act, it was, so the Chasam Sofer explains, like, why did the soul come down? Why did their souls come down to Pinchas in the first place? The answer is because their sin was being mora halacha b'fnei rabbon, that they made a halachic ruling without the consent, without the consultation of Moshe. That was one of the sins they committed, because they acted freelance. They just made their own decision to go and bring this offering without consulting with Moshe. That was a sin. That's very, very wrong. The Gemara says a person should never make a halachic ruling in front of their teacher, right? That's just part of the honor, part of the honor for the teacher. You give the honor to the teacher. You don't give halachic rulings in front of the teacher. And they made that mistake. But think about Pinchas. What does Pinchas do? Did Pinchas consult with Moshe to go ahead and kill Zimri and Cosby? The answer is no. The Gemara says he didn't consult. He didn't consult because he acted of his own volition. However, the Gemara explains that this was an exception. The Gemara says that Shmuel says, and the Gemara, the sage Shmuel says, Pinchas, he said the following. He saw, when he saw what was happening, the atrocity, the immorality being committed, Ra Pinchas shor, she'ein chachma ve'ein tevun ve'ein tzeneged Hashem. There is no counsel, there is no wisdom facing Hashem literally. Meaning to say, kol makom she'esh chal Hashem, when there's a chil Hashem, when there's a desecration of God's name, ein cholken kovod l'rav. Then in that situation, you don't need to consult with the teacher. If there's a chil Hashem taking place, you don't need to consult with the teacher. You've got to act quickly. You've got to act right now. You've got to make sure you're acting correctly. We're not going to get into that, but you have to make sure you're doing the right thing. Pinchas was right for what he did, right? But the principle of asking the Rebbe first, should I do this? Should I not do this? When it comes to chil Hashem, you don't give cover to the Rebbe. You don't give special precedence or cover to the teacher in that situation. So that means to say, Nisk, so he remembered this part, he remembered that idea, and therefore he went ahead, he didn't speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. Lefika hora Pinchas halacha b'fnei rabba, therefore Pinchas ruled on this by himself without consulting with Moshe. V'lohim to Rishus Moshe, he didn't wait to receive permission from Moshe. Shlo yiru roim v'yilmadu lahates aramis, because he saw the chil Hashem, he didn't want people to see what was happening, he had to stop it right away. So he was right. He was rewarded. And this became a tikkun for the neshamas of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, who erred in this regard because they were not trying to avert a chil Hashem. When they went into the Mishkan with the foreign fire, they weren't doing that to avert a desecration of God's name. They were just acting of their own fervor, their own enthusiasm. So they shouldn't have done that. So they made a halachic ruling without consultation with Moshe. So because of that mistake, so they lost, they died. But as a result, their kahuna disappeared completely. In reward of Pinchas, not reward, but as almost like a tikkun, a rectification of their soul. Now when Pinchas now does the right thing and demonstrates the right way to act unilaterally without the consultation of the teacher, When he does that correctly, that becomes now a tikkun, a rectification of Nadav and Avihu. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Nadav and Avihu's souls came into him and received their ongoing identity of kahuna through the body of Pinchas, because he rectified their sin, so to speak. And that's why specifically now he becomes a Kohen, because he's now adopting the kahuna, he's really taking over the kahuna of Nadav and Avihu, who erred in ruling in front of their teacher, because he ruled correctly in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what happened. Amazing idea. That's the Chasam Sofer and other commentaries as well. So that's a little bit, that's a fascinating idea. So Pinchas, here's an interesting question though. Not question, but really it's an observation. So Parashas Pinchas, right, we read tomorrow. And as someone pointed out, you know, the juxtaposition is fascinating, isn't it, on the calendar? The juxtaposition of time. Like, why is it so that Parashas Pinchas falls out precisely at this time? Right, this time. So you're probably thinking, like Bart said at the beginning, why is it so that Parashas Pinchas coincides with July 4th? No, rubbish. Not July 4th. The 17th of Tammuz, right? The 17th of Tammuz. Yesterday was the 17th of Tammuz, which was the fast of Tammuz. So it's not by accident. It's always the case. You know, the way the parashas fall out during the calendar year, you know, they move around. But one of the things which is always the case is Parshas Pinchas is always the opening parsha to the three weeks, and that's always the case. And what's the connection? So one in another, I guess, mystical idea is a mystical idea, and gets into Gilgulim as well and reincarnation. So another dimension of Pinchas, right, is that, you know, we said he received the souls of Nadav and Avihu. But another very famous idea about Pinchas is that he becomes reincarnated into the form of Elijah the prophet, Elionavi. So there's an association to Elijah the prophet and Pinchas. And it's for this reason, that's why the Haftorah this week is about Elijah. And we learned this about a month ago, in Malachim Aleph, chapter 19, about the story of Elijah the prophet, because Elijah the prophet also acted with zealotry. And he put down the prophets of the 400 prophets of the worshippers of Baal in this big showdown on Mount Carmel, when he really showed the authority of Hashem, bringing about a miraculous fire coming from heaven to destroy these 400 prophets of the idol called Baal. And he was this whole story there describes his tremendous zealotry and his fighting for the vengeance of Hashem, getting rid of idolatry in Eretz Yisrael, which was very prevalent at that time period. So Elijah also is a kanoi. He's also a zealot fighting for the honor of Hashem. Pinchas is a zealot fighting for the honor of Hashem. But they say also, these different sources, the Midrashim say, that he was actually a Gilgal. He was a reincarnation of Pinchas. The Pinchas is Eliyahu. For example, it says in one of the Aramaic translations or commentary translations from the times of the Gemara on the pasuk itself of Esprisi Shalom, where it says in the parasha that Hashem said to Pinchas, he's going to give to him his bris shalom, his covenant of peace, which translates into the kahuna. So the Targum Yonis ben Uziel says, Ha'ana gazal le yask yomi, shalom, shalom. I decree, I cut with him a covenant of peace. I'm going to make him into a malach kaim, into an eternal angel. He's going to live forever in order to bring in and to usher in and to announce the coming of the Mashiach, to announce the coming of the Mashiach. Because Elijah the prophet is the preamble, before Mashiach comes, Elijah the prophet is going to come and announce the coming of the Geula and the coming of the Mashiach. So Pinchas is Eliyahu, who's going to be the harbinger of the Messianic era. So for this reason, this is why this parsha always begins with the 3 weeks, because the 3 weeks we are commemorating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And we want to end the end, we want to see an end of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We want to see the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt. We want to see the Mashiach come. We want to see the final Geula. So who's going to be the one who's going to bring the final Geula? Who's going to be the harbinger of announcing the final Geula? Elijah the prophet, Elionave. Who's Elionave? He is a continuation of Pinchas. Medrash says also that, again, I give to him my covenant of peace. Amar Shimon ben Lakish, Reish Lakish says, Pinchas hu Eliyahu. Pinchas is the same as Elijah the prophet. Amala Kodesh Baruch Hashem said to him, Atan the Sata Shalom Bein Yisrael Beine Ba'olam Hazeh, you made peace between me and the Jewish people in this world. Afla Asid Lavo, also in the future. Atahu Sha'asid Litein Shalom Beine Ubein Lebein Bene. You'll also bring peace between me and the Jewish people in the future. Then we quote the Pasuk, Hine Anochi Shalach Lachem, behold, I will send to you as Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet, Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem, before the great day when Hashem comes. Veheshiv Levavos Alabon, and will restore the hearts of the children to the parents of the children. He'll bring about a teshuvah movement, be involved in the bringing about of a teshuvah movement in order to bring back the Mashiach in the future. Elijah is the harbinger of the Messianic era, and therefore that's why Parshas Pinchas and the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas is all about Eliyahu HaNavi. Is the opening parsha of the 3 weeks in our tefillas and our wish and our aspiration for the return of the Beis Hamikdash and the Mashiach and for Elijah the prophet to actually come and do this and fulfill this role of bringing the Mashiach. It's an amazing idea. That's the idea. So just as a fascinating, I want to just share a quick story, an incredible story. I told this story on Wednesday night, but it's such a moving story and a personal story, which relates to this, which is, the clarity of the story didn't come to fruition for me until literally this week, when I was telling the story on Wednesday night. But we're seeing that Elijah the prophet, that's his role. He's going to bring the Mashiach. He's going to be the harbinger. Now, at the same time, Elijah and Pinchas, they are kanoim. They're zealots, and they present themselves with a tremendous zealotry, fighting for the vengeance of Hashem, which is a necessary trait. And this is a balance that we all have to try to kind of achieve for ourselves, a balance of zealotry and peace as well. Not all zealotry, not all peace, because if you lean towards the peace, then you end up allowing things to take place which shouldn't take place, sins to happen which shouldn't take place. Zealotry is also not too good. There's got to be a balance. So zealotry as a trait is a virtue, right? Peace and peace-loving and shalom is a virtue as well. But what we find in the stories of Elijah is that he was actually criticized for being too zealous. He was criticized for being too zealous because after the whole episode on Mount Carmel, and he did what he did, correctly so, and putting down the idolatry of the prophets of Baal, so he was praised for that. But Hashem kept asking him, he kept coming to him and asking him, what do you have to say now? Like, what now? What now? Like, what have you done? Where are you holding right now, so to speak? Mm-hmm. And he kept saying, I'm fighting for the vengeance of Hashem. I'm fighting for the vengeance of Hashem. So just to cut a long story short, he was criticized for not seeing the merit of the Jewish people sufficiently. Mm-hmm. He kept seeing the faults and the wrong of the Jewish people. And he was fighting for, it wasn't just the prophets of Baal who were doing terrible things. The Jewish people were following the idolatry at that time. So there was a tremendous guilt. And the king himself, the king of the Northern Kingdom, was very guilty of leading the Jewish people into idolatry at that time. So Eliyahu HaNavi was seeing constantly the negativity, the kind of the flaws, and not recognizing the quality, the virtues of the Jewish people. It's for this reason, the reason the Medrash says, this is one of the reasons why Eliyahu HaNavi comes to visit every single bris. At every single bris in the future, his neshama comes down. You have Kisei Shel Eliyahu, I think there's a chair over here, the seat of Eliyahu, because the neshama of Elijah the prophet always comes back, keeps coming back. And the Medrash says, in order to see, so to speak, to see the merits of the Jewish people, that you weren't quite right in seeing the Jewish people only negatively. They have tremendous merits as well. And he keeps coming back. He comes back to the Pesach Seder as well, right? What's happened? What's the Pesach Seder? We are bringing the Korban Pesach, the Pesach offering, where we've slaughtered this Pesach offering and offered the blood put the blood on the doorpost. We've exhibited Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, in taking the Egyptian idolatry and taking the blood, Bris Mila as well. So Eliyahu HaNavi keeps coming back to be able to see the merits of the Jewish people. So he's a so to speak, a Melamed Zuchus. He's coming to see the Zuchus, the merit of the Jewish people in history, because it's almost like a tikkun for the fact he didn't do it then. That's what the Medrash says. So there is, and the stories, and many, many stories about how people have what's called Gilui Eliyahu, revelation of Elijah the prophet. right, where he comes and people, the mysterious stories where they say he came and there was a person comes to them in a strange situation and he disappears, the person disappears, and he comes to save the Jewish people, to save that person. Countless stories about these strange stories. So I want to share a story with you, like a personal story. I'm not saying this is, I don't want to put myself out and say that this was an example of Gilui and Eliyahu, the revelation of Elijah the prophet, but, just listen to this story. So many years ago when I was in Eshet Torah,
must have been 18 or 19 years old at the time, I was very enthusiastic about Kirov. There was an organization near the Kosal called the Jewish Heritage House, and they used to host students and travelers and would offer them Shabbos hospitality to go places for Shabbos. So they used to get boys from the yeshiva, from Eish, to be chaperones to take these guests to their respective homes for Shabbos.
I volunteered to be a chaperone to take whoever was assigned to me. So I was assigned, and I was assigned to like a small group of guys. And I was walking, I walked from the Kosel, that's where I met them. And then I walked from the, and it was the group, the two, actually, I was chaperoning two fellows, two young men who were in Hebrew University at the time. They were students. They had no connection to Judaism. They just wanted to spend a Shabbos where they have a Friday night meal with someone. So I was assigned these two fellows, and I walked from the Kosel through the Arab Shuk. It was pretty safe to walk through the Arab Shuk at that time. Walk through the Arab Shuk to Damascus Gate. That's where we walked through. It was okay to do that. And then I would walk. We would all walk. And then I'd walk to the whatever. I figured whichever neighborhood I walked to. But along the way, the whole idea was that you have an opportunity to speak to these fellows and to talk to them and to talk to them about Judaism, about yeshiva. Maybe they would be interested in going to yeshiva. So I was talking to them, and I was maybe a little bit over enthusiastic, encouraging them. They weren't too interested, but I was trying my best to kind of give them an inspiration and to encourage them maybe to come to Eish HaTorah, and they weren't interested. So I reached the place, the neighborhood where I was supposed to take them for the Friday night meal. So I showed them the house, and they went off, and I was by myself, and I was in some location. I can't remember exactly the name, but it was. It was a location that I could see the main highway coming into Jerusalem, right? The main highway. And I could see all these cars driving into Jerusalem, it was a Friday night on Shabbos. And I was just standing by myself looking out over this road, over this highway. And I was feeling bad with myself that I was maybe too much of a zealot, actually. I remember the feeling I had. I had too much zeal. I was too much of a zealot in trying to encourage these two fellows essentially to come to. I was telling them maybe they should consider giving up their place in university and college and just throw it away and come into yeshiva. I was very young, right? So I was feeling like I just upset with myself, and I was standing there looking out at this highway of going into Jerusalem. And then all of a sudden, a man stands by my side. I remember his face. He had like a beautiful face, like a reddish beard, and a beautiful face. He was a chassid standing next to me. And I don't know where he came from. And he's looking out at this road. And he says, it's so sad. It's so sad. And he was bemoaning all of these, Yidden, just driving on Shabbos and coming into Jerusalem and, driving. And it was Shabbos, and he was like feeling sad. And I was feeling sad as well. And he was looking out, and he said, what can you do? What can you do? And he says, but they're our brothers. We have to love them. We have to love them anyway. Right. And he said, we have to love them. And then after he said that, he moves to behind me. Right. And he walks away to behind my back, and then he walks down an alleyway. We were talking as he was talking to me. And he slips around behind me, goes down like a little alley. And I didn't know where he went. So I walked backwards to see down. He wasn't there. I remember just saying, where did he get? It didn't make any sense to me because he, as quickly as he came, he just disappeared, vanished. Right. And so I used to think, oh, wow, like, and I tell people this story, and I say, yeah. So they would say, yeah, it's Gilui and Eliyahu, it's revelation of Elijah the prophet. So, yeah, I thought that's, nice. It's a nice, and I never, but it was only this week when I was learning about this, and I was learning about how the role of Elijah the prophet is to come back in every generation and to find the merit of the Jewish people and to see the goodness and to see the merits of the Jewish people. All of a sudden, I thought, wow, it was the first time. I said, that's exactly what he was doing. Like, he was standing there and he was like looking and he was bemoaning the situation. He was bemoaning the situation. So he had that spirit of, I don't know what it really was, but, you know, it sounds, you know, very close to it, right? He was bemoaning the situation, the Chil Shabbos, the desecration of Shabbos, but at the same time, he was being melambed Zchut, he was trying to find goodness in the Jewish people. And that's really what happened in that episode. So I was really mesmerized. It was like an incredible story. But this is the explanation as to why Pinchas is the beginning of the portion. Pinchas, Elijah, right, the beginning of the portion, and the 3 weeks. Why it ushers in the 3 weeks and the coming of the Mashiach. That's for that reason. But there's another connection to the 3 weeks and Pinchas. Another connection, because the Gemara says that what happened. What were the actual events which took place on the 17th of Tammuz, which brought about what happened on the 17th of Tammuz? Like, why is it a feast day? Why is it a fast day? So the Gemara says, right? It says, but on the 17th of Tammuz, there were 5 things which took place, 5 tragedies which happened on the 17th of Tammuz. Number one, the Shtabru Aluchos, the first tablets were broken by Moshe because of the sin of the golden calf. So that was a first tragedy, the sin of the golden calf and the breaking of the tablets. Really, it's the sin of the golden calf, which was marked by the breaking of the tablets. The second one was Bitl HaTamid, the daily offering was abolished. The daily offering ceased to take place, the daily offering. That's the connection to the parasha, because the daily offering is mentioned in the parasha as well, right? The daily offering is mentioned in this week's parasha, the Karban HaTamid. And that's something which became nullified on the 10th, on the 17th of Tammuz, because of the gradual buildup of the Roman oppression over Jerusalem. They gradually broke away and they broke down all of the activities, the sacrifices, the avodah, the Beis Hamikdash. And when the Tamid, the daily offering, was finally wasn't able to continue on because of the Roman oppression, so that was a day of tragedy, and that took place on the 17th of Tammuz. And then it says also the walls were breached on the 17th of Tammuz, and also a Roman general burnt Sefer Torah on the 17th of Tammuz, and he also set up an idol in the Beis Hamikdash on the 17th of Tammuz. So these terrible tragedies, breaking of the Luchos, Chata Egel, sin of the golden calf, putting an idol in the Beis Hamikdash, burning a Sefer Torah, right, the breaching of the walls of Jerusalem, all these things happened on the 17th of Tammuz. But the connection to the parasha is also the Tamid offering, the daily offering, the daily sacrifice, which was brought in the Beis Hamikdash, also stopped taking place on the 17th of Tammuz. Now, if I had asked you, which of those 5 things are the most serious tragedies? Mm. Well, golden calf is a serious tragedy. You know, breaching the walls of Jerusalem, burning a Sefer Torah, setting up an idol in the Beis Hamikdash, these are pretty, you know, serious tragedies. You know, the stopping of the daily sacrifice doesn't seem to be as, you know, significant, yet it's high up in the list. Listen to this, right? There's a Medrash. The Medrash asks the question, which verse encapsulates the entire Torah? Like, what is, if you had to, what verse, you know, the famous question, tell me all of Judaism on 1 foot. What is the verse which tells us all of Judaism on 1 foot? So you'll tell me, love your neighbor as yourself. That's what the Hillel told the would-be convert. He said, love your neighbor as yourself. That's the entire Torah. The rest is commentary, right? Another verse that the Medrash says, another verse which encapsulates the entirety of Judaism, all on 1 foot. What's another verse? Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's also, so the Medrash says, Ben Zoma said, it's Shema Yisrael. Ben Nana said, love your neighbor as yourself. That's the pasuk which encapsulates the entirety of Judaism. So that we understand. Listen to this though. Shimon ben Pazi, a third opinion, says, you know what, which verse encapsulates the entire Torah? The daily offering. Right, the pasuk which says "Asa keves echo tasa baboka." The passage in this parasha about the daily offering, and the offering which stopped taking place on the 17th of Tammuz, that sums up the entirety of Torah. That sums up the, now it's very hard to understand. Shema Yisrael, I understand, sums up all of Judaism, all of the philosophy of Judaism. Love your neighbor as yourself also encapsulates so much, because really love your neighbor as yourself is describes the relationship between us and another human being, which is only a mirror image of our relationship between us and Hashem. So that's why love your neighbor as yourself is such an important verse. Of course, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Echad. But what is it, this that the daily offering is a verse and a concept which encapsulates all of Judaism? So the Maharal explains. He says, "Masha Omer," and not only that, the Gemara, the Medrash concludes by saying, "Omer Reploni, so and so stood up on his feet, and he said, Halacha keben ben Pazai." The most important verse, the one verse which encapsulates all of Judaism more than any other verse, is this last verse. Is the verse of bring the daily offering. Very, very perplexing. Says the Maharal, Umash Omer ben Pazi, this that ben Pazi said, that the verse which encapsulates all of Judaism is this verse about the daily offering, is a klal gadol b'Torah yos, it's much more of an important principle in Judaism. Meaning to say, Masha Adam Ovid Hashem Yizmarah Patamidis, this that a person serves Hashem on a constant basis, Hagomo, for who Abdo, someone who serves Hashem constantly, consistently, His true Eved. That's a true Eved Hashem. That's a true servant of Hashem. Umash the Kamosha Eved Lusar Avudasa, just like a regular servant or slave, never separates from his service, from his master, from one iota. He's constantly Ovdo Tamidi, is a constant servant, a constant servant to his master. That's what a servant is. Lekach Oma as a Kevin. That's why this verse is chosen. Shazenemal carbon tomid, speaking about the carbon tomid, the daily offering, which is brought day in, day out, and this was stopped in the times of the second base of Migdash, which means that the carbon tomid was being brought for hundreds and hundreds of years. The daily offering, morning offering, afternoon offering, nonstop, never stopped, right? There's not a single day of the year that the carbon tomid doesn't stop. Right, I mean, unlike other offerings, they come and go depending on this, on the occasion, depending on what the situation is. The Yom Tov, the holiday, Shabbos also once a week, but the Korban Tomid is the Korban is the sacrifice which is brought day and night, never stopping. So when this Shazen Nemal Korban Tomid, and that's a klal gadol, that's the klal of the Torah, Shetachlis haMechuven. Because the ultimate goal, what is our goal? What is our mission? What is our identity? Is Shiyeh Adam Eved LaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our mission is be an Eved to Hashem. Our mission is be a servant to Hashem. Hold on to that role. Hold on to that identity. Own that identity. Own the identity that you're an Eved Hashem. For Kol Sha'a Torah Pirush, the rest is all just explanation. Shall you their mitzvahs who over that's borrowed, because the mitzvahs are now an expression of your identity of being an Eved Hashem. The mitzvahs are an outgrowth. You have to first establish the fact that you're an Eved Hashem. I'm an Eved. That's my role. My identity is an Eved Hashem. I'm in it lock, stock, and barrel. I'm here. You know, we have a lot of, you know, many people have a lot of beliefs. We believe in things. Stand by your belief. Stand by the belief. Stand by the belief. Be an Eved Hashem. Don't just say it. Don't just talk it. Don't just aspire to it. Stand by your belief. Stand by your belief. An Eved stands by his commitment. So an Eved Hashem is someone who stands by his belief and he commits himself to it and he's always there. You know, the difficulty of maintaining a regular routine every day, day in, day out, is very, very difficult because a lot of challenges come our way. But the real test of the metal, whether a person's a true Eved Hashem, is if you do it rain or shine. Whether you do it, it's easy or not easy, right? Whether the weather is good for you to, I know, walk on Shabbos, not good for you to walk on Shabbos. You do it anyway, because that's my obligation. I'm an Eved Hashem, right? That's what I do, because that's what we have to do. We have to start off with our A, I'm an Eved Hashem. B, what are the commandments? What are the rules? And now we have to do it. That's an Eved Hashem. And that's what the daily offering teaches us. And that's why it's an amazing thing. The daily offering, the carbon tamid, is the klal gadol of the Torah. That's the major principle of the Torah, because it symbolizes being an Eved Hashem. The others, as much as, not God forbid, to minimize them, but I'm only quoting the Medrash over here, the Medrash says that the other two pale in comparison to this mitzvah over here, or this concept over here, of the carbon tomah, the day in, day out, you know, responsibility. So that is the, you know, I was, you know, where do I end with this? Because I was thinking to myself, the you know, what could be the connection and the common theme throughout the entire portion. This is a bit of a stretch. I don't know, maybe not a stretch. When we reflect back upon all the different topics of the portion, let's go back over the topics of the portion. The topics were Pinchas, right? The zealotry of Pinchas. The next is, as a result of that, now harass the Midianites because of the seduction, which they did. Then we've got the census of the Jewish people, the census. And also, it's interesting about the census is the number of the Jewish people remained the same, basically, almost exactly the same number of the Jewish people. So there was a continuity of the same number of the Jewish people. Then we got the laws of inheritance. Inheritance is all about continuity as well. Continuity going on to the next generation, right? That's what inheritance is about. Moshe beholds the land. He's not allowed to continue on to Eretz Israel. He's not allowed to continue on. Yeshua is appointed next leader. Continuity, continuity. And then the sacrifice, the daily offering, is continuity and consistency. So I was thinking to myself that maybe that's our theme of the parasha. It's all about continuity and consistency. Continuity and consistency. But what's the key to continuity and consistency? The key to continuity and consistency, at least one of the keys to continuity and consistency, is you got to have a bit of zeal inside of you. You need to have zeal. If a person doesn't have zeal, and they're a bit, yeah, wishy-washy, you know, complacent. It's okay. It's okay if I do this. It's okay if I don't do that. You know, that's called complacency. Zeal is, I'm taking the charge. I'm taking it and I'm holding on to the baton of responsibility to be an Eved Hashem. That was Pinchas. He comes out as a real zealot. I'm an Eved Hashem. I can't stand for this Chil Hashem. There's a Chil Hashem. We have to take action. Got to do something about it. Got to stop it right away. That's zeal. That's being an Eved Hashem. And that conviction, that tenacity, that conviction is what maintains consistency and continuity. You know, it's that zeal which has allowed us to be sitting here today, because it's the zeal of the previous generations. It's the zeal of those of the grandparents, the great-grandparents, who had the tenacity and the zeal to stand by. I mean, this I've said this many times before, to stand by their Shemir Shabbos and not working on Shabbos in face of the challenges and difficulty they were experiencing at the time. I mean, this is a fact. This is just a statistical fact. It's only those Jews who stood by their values back in the 1800s, early 1900s, and didn't succumb to the social pressures of whatever they were experiencing, that their children remain Jewish and their grandchildren remain Jewish, and we are sitting here today. Because anyone, we can all trace our ancestry back to traditional Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah mitzvahs, grandparents or great-grandparents. If it's not our parents, if it's not our grandparents, then it's certainly the great-grandparents or the great-great-grandparents. But people those great-great-grandparents who did drift away, who didn't have the zeal, who didn't have the zealotry, who didn't have that commitment of being an Eved Hashem, they don't have Jewish great descendants today, because they all disappeared through assimilation and intermarriage. They're not here anymore. Right, so zeal, healthy zeal, is the key to consistency and continuity. So that's the idea.